Howdy, folks. This is good old JR Jim Ross. I want to thank you for downloading the Ross Report. And I certainly want to thank all the sponsors. We've got some great sponsors who make this possible every single week.
Picking up 5 quarts of Castrol Edge Full Synthetic with a premium filter for $29.99 from Advance Auto Parts is a strong move. Because that means your oil won't just be strong, it'll be titanium strong. And that strength means your engine can handle anything from hot summer road trips to cold morning commutes. Your oil will keep on trucking. Not just trucking.
Monster trucking.
Even if your monster truck is just a hatchback. Advance Auto Parts. Let's get you back to the garage. See store for details.
You know, folks, one of my favorite things to do besides this podcast is write on my blog and work on my website. You know that website that you haven't visited yet? JRSBARBQ.com? Shame on you. It's free. Free is good. And if creating your own website, your own blog, express yourself, is something that you thought about doing, then you should do it. And let my friends at Squarespace.com help you out. Squarespace makes it fast. They make it easy to create your own professional website. And now you can get a free trial and 10% off your first purchase by going to Squarespace.com and using the offer code ROSS. That's Ross. You can choose one of the amazing Super Square design templates, and then just drag and drop your content. It's really that easy. And every site comes with an online store. And let me tell you, you can monetize the heck out of that. Plans start at just $8 per month and come with a free domain name if you sign up for 1 year. So go ahead, give it a try. And after you build your site, remember to use the offer code ROSS to get 10% off your first purchase. That's ROSS to save you 10% and to show your support to my podcast, of which we do thank you. Squarespace is a proud sponsor of the Ross Report, and now you can be too. Just go to squarespace.com and use the promo code ROSS, R-O-S-S, at checkout. Squarespace, a better web starts with your website.
You know, we love hearing from you, so keep on sending those tweets and comments, because we read every one of them. Your opinion is important. That's why we don't want you to miss the chance to take our listener survey at podcast1.com. You see, your responses will help us make this show the very best it can be. It's not a lot of effort, because it'll only take you about 3 minutes, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing that you helped us get better. So do it now. Take the survey at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com. And don't forget, keep those tweets and comments coming.
He's considered the greatest broadcaster in wrestling history. And now, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross brings his legendary voice and his famous friends to the podcast world. Welcome to the Ross Report.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ross Report. I'm Jim Ross, feeling good this week. We're going to bring you some slobber knocker audio here on the Ross Report on Podcast One, podcastone.com. I appreciate you guys joining us and spreading the word of our podcast. Our ratings can grow every week. The number of podcasters that download us for free grows every week, of which we're very grateful. It makes it even more fun to know that you're building a business that you're having so much fun doing and communicating with the people that you respect the most, the wrestling fan. So that's a good thing. Nonetheless, some need to think about subscribing. I get this all the time. I missed this episode. Well, you can fix that for free. Just go to iTunes and subscribe. It's a done deal. If I can figure it out, I know you brain surgeons out there can much easier. So just go to iTunes, subscribe for free, and you won't miss a show. We've got a hell of a show today now, talking about shows. With my guest, the legendary bad man from Borger, Texas, Stan the Lariat Hansen, on this very podcast this very week. And I got a feeling we're going to have a nice long talk that I know you're going to enjoy. Stan doesn't do a lot of these podcasts. and what a man he was, in that his run in the States is so sometimes overlooked because of his amazing success in Japan. But make no mistake, wherever he put his boots on and wherever that market was, he made an impact because he made himself different. And he made people notice him in a very organic way. So this is going to be fun today. Let's see here. Let me tell you that we have had so much fun here doing this. The show's growing so much. It's great to get those notes, you know, or those emails that, hey, here's what you did this week on downloads. And I just have you guys to thank for that because you spread the word, and that's important. You just tell one more person. It's a big deal because they might download us, and that counts. So that's cool. So it's word of mouth. It's kind of a team effort without question, and I'll try to hold my end up. And I just want to thank you guys again for checking us out, supporting their sponsors. That's big. You know, you can't do these shows free without sponsors. Just do the math. Nothing for nothing leaves nothing. And we made it easy for you to find all the folks that do support our efforts here as official sponsors. They're at podcastone.com. Just click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page and then hit the Ross Report button. Hit the old button, folks. Amazon is also a proud sponsor of the Ross Report, and you'll find all of my Amazon links right there on that page as well. Amazon, by the way, you know, gives a small percentage of any purchase that you make back to the Ross Report to help us cover our production costs, studio time, etc., etc. It'd be called overhead. I've got links for Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, Amazon USA. So anytime you're doing any online shopping, please click on to the Amazon, click on to Amazon through my links and help support the show. And you might even want to bookmark that page to make it really easy. That's podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Hit the Ross Report button. And I can't thank you enough for doing that. And thanks to the sponsors as well, including Amazon, for helping us get this show free each and every week. Stan Hansen, moments away from now. The bad man from Borger, as you can see as I shuffle my notes before I take a sip of, let's all sit together. Go ahead. You're exactly right. Route 44 Sonic Diet Peach Tea. It's a part of my elixir of the podcast. I think one of the reasons I'm the potentate of podcast is because I drank the Route 44 Diet Peach Tea. I think it is the nectar for the potentate hierarchy, of which I hope to achieve. I'm downselling myself. This show's in the top 10 in the world, just about every day of the week. It's amazing. And it's all thanks to you guys for spreading the word. So, hey, we appreciate it. Let's get to what's on my mind here real quick so we can buzz through these. Not a lot about WWE. I know that the John Cena-Brock Lesnar match, I'm very interested to see how the creative will book that match and what kind of match that we will see. I'm curious after SummerSlam what kind of match that they will have. And obviously the no-brainer is that history won't repeat itself at the Night of Champions as we saw at SummerSlam as it relates to Cena getting beat like a tackling dummy. So that has my curiosity and is another reason that I'll watch off the WWE Network, which I wear out on my iPad. But it's kind of a one-match pay-per-view. But that doesn't bother me. I don't perceive that as a negative. And it might even make the whole night easier to watch, quite frankly, because I don't have any expectations of anything else other than the main event, the return match. That's where my focus is. So now somebody underneath those guys could slip in the back door, steal the show, and maximize their minutes. Who the hell knows? I think I might consider the fact that Cena should have probably stayed off TV an extra week and not gone to Anaheim. You know, I mentioned that before the event. Had no idea what the plans were, but I think I probably, looking back at it, it's easy to say now, but I did say it before, he should be off of TV a couple of weeks at least to sell that beating he took from Lesnar at SummerSlam. It doesn't hurt to make John look vulnerable, and he's not Superman. And even if he was Superman, there's this thing called kryptonite. And so if Cena is Superman, then somebody need to be finding the kryptonite. So John Cena is WWE's top guy, and no one else is even close. There ain't no race yet. I don't see her coming around the mountain or him coming around the mountain just yet. Anaheim Hall of Fame panel, I want to mention that to you. I watched that and thought it was unique. Interesting start to the show with obviously on paper, great name, amazing star power with Flair, Hogan, and Shawn. I did think that HBK stood out a little bit in on the panel because he felt the most natural. And that just maybe might be my observation. It may not be accurate, but that's how I perceive that segment. And I was glad that the guys at least tried to be their old TV persona selves and not be memorizing the script. So that was, I thought that was pretty cool. Was it the best segment of the year? Probably not, obviously. But it did overachieve, and I thought Sean kind of stole the scene. This AJ Page story has got me scratching my head. And it needs something. I need help with this. I like both these ladies a great deal. I think they're really, really talented. And I want to see them have their, maybe they have their run together, if that's what they have chosen to do. Because I think it could be very entertaining. But, man, it needs something. It needs something to make me become more interested. I'm not quite connected to it yet. Dolph Ziggler, I think, can make a great Intercontinental Champion. I said that here before. He finally gets his a chance. But he needs a hot heel to run with. And I'm wondering, thinking out loud, is a Miz better suited to be an advocate and only wrestling sporadically? And only then when he's forced into it. You know, maybe Paul Heyman could spend some time with Miz. Maybe Miz is the next coming of Paul Heyman. Big shoes to fill, but hey, look, we all got older. As I say, recording this from while I stand in the middle of the pasture grazing, there was a metaphor there of being turned out to pasture. As we move on in a catatonic state, I think here's the thing. I think Ziggler's going to be a great Intercontinental Champion. He can work with either side of the fence. He can work with anybody. He's very good. He's very fundamentally sound. He could be spectacular when he's pushed because he's an athlete. You need to push athletes. That's why I love recruiting them. When you push them, you get great things back. And Miz has really remade himself nicely. I am more pleased with Mike's TV persona now than before he left to do his movie. So in other words, I think his persona now is as fundamentally sound as it's ever been for his role. And, you know, that's, he's a chicken blank heel. That's his style. He's what Flair was in Flair's heyday of being the heel that had a little bit of a yellow in him when he was forced into a corner. But if he got to gain the unfair advantage on you and get the drop on you, he could be a badass. So I see Miz as a long-term big money, maybe the next Paul Heyman, maybe a next Bobby Heenan type. They can be invaluable if they're really good at what they do. This is going to come as a shocker. I strongly consider turning Bray Wyatt into a fan favorite. Now pick yourself up. And I do it while the bloom is still on the proverbial rose. You know, it's not like WWE, if you look at it, is long on top fan favorites. That list rather short. Loving the in-ring development of Rollins and Reigns, two kids I saw a lot down in NXT. They're both at different stages of their lives and their career. They both work hard, nice, great respect for that, and are both very athletic, by the way. Now, just as any young talent, they got to be consistently adding things to their repertoire. And that's a hell of a challenge. However, I think that their biggest challenge is continuing to develop their verbal skills. And that takes practice, quite frankly, as silly as it sounds, away from the cameras. Basically, when you're alone or you're driving somewhere and someone will, you know, acquiesce to your insanity of practicing your promos in the car ride. Some really good promos have been practiced, refined, and perfected on some car trips over the territory years. Think about those classrooms. As I have one more sip of my Sonic. You know, there were Sonics in Oklahoma Company. I think that they should understand my devoutness as a Sonic person since I was a young lad. And sponsor this broadcast. But that's me, and I do have something to gain from that. So we've decided that Rollins and Reigns got great athleticism. Their in-ring work still needs to evolve, add a few things, always be adding a little, tweaking a little, making your game a little bit different. You're always looking as a pro to find out what makes people notice you in a positive way, meaning depending on how you're cast positive or how you're booked, if you must. So anyway, I think that those verbal skills just got to be worked on, and because you don't want to miss there a little bit. When you're close, get there and put the whole kit and caboodle together. And those two guys, Rollins and Reigns, both have it. Question of the week, I don't know the answer. That's what I'm asking. Short matches between named talents help whom? Short matches, like a lot of matches, sometimes on Raw, are like 2 minutes. And so I'm just wondering, in today's mindset, who does the 2 to 3 minute match help? It's easy to answer the winner. I wonder. Everybody talks about Brock Lesnar needing opponents going forward because he's this, you know, unbeatable force. And who's going to challenge Lesnar for the WWE title? And, of course, taking the, as I've mentioned, you know, my stance, even thinking about taking the championship from Lesnar at this stage of the game, in my view, is somewhat ridiculous. I wouldn't think that way. That's just my opinion. You know, so, you know, don't get hot about it. I have an opinion. I want to leave Lesnar the champion. And we'd see him wrestle at most pay-per-views, and maybe not all of them. That's how I feel about it. But I think that if you look at the list of talents that could be roadblocks for Lesnar as he roars into WrestleMania 31 next April, there needs to be some roadblocks. And can you get, let's say, with a third, you know, with a nice build-up, Batista ready, for example, for Brock Lesnar? Or maybe a Big Show on a 30 to 60 day roll, followed by a 30 to 60 day rolling Mark Henry, while the Big Show and Lesnar have their thing. Mark Henry and Lesnar would be interesting to me. Cesaro, I'd dine to see that match. And even Bray Wyatt somewhere down the road, all could be viable opponents to Brock Lesnar. And those that will let me know that you don't agree, that's cool, because you should have the right to your opinion. I just can't hear you right now as you yell at your podcast device. And if you look around and people are looking at you, they probably think you're a little crazy. But it's just my opinion. You got some guys that I think can be made with great right creative and presentation and execution to be viable for Lesnar, while you get his heir apparent to the throne ready, but not at an amazing pace. Be deliberate on the Roman Reigns build, and the fans will appreciate him more. Especially if he gets his ass whipped every now and then by two or three guys, and then he leaves selling, and he comes back and gets even. There's more of an effect on building a young baby face with him coming back and extracting revenge than always winning the fight in the first round. I want to see him suffer. I want to see him withstand and stand upright. And that journey is fun to go on, because I know at the end he will prevail. Therefore, I will be happy. So that's one school of thought. The thing about it is, if Lesnar continues to be billed as a super beast, then WWE has to be careful that he's not a massive fan favorite come WrestleMania 31. That is, unless that's what you want. The one thing that an argument can be made is that a fan favorite Brock Lesnar is the closest thing to complimenting John Cena's star power on today's WWE roster. As a top guy, at least. The Lesnar thing is, to me, you can't lose. He's going to be the hottest heel you've had in years by WrestleMania 31, or he's going to become this respected monster that some of these guys that bash me on Twitter, those keyboard warriors, he's going to be their hero. They're going to be as brash as he is. They wish they could, type thing. Hey, stranger things have happened. This week's pet peeves: distractions that cause one to lose, as in a music interrupt. You have to kid. You're just kidding me. You're killing me as well. Don't kill me. Really, I mean, you're in a wrestling match. You're engaged with another world-class athlete in a ring, let's say on Raw, and all of a sudden you're bearing down and you're in athletic competition and you're working your ass off, and then the music plays and it kicks you right out of the moment, which causes you the obligatory distraction, of which you lose because of the distraction. Oh, I think the overuse of handicap matches is also needs to be thought of occasionally. just monitoring how you're managing your business. A lot of handicap matches, they don't mean what they used to mean. They almost don't mean anything because we've overexposed what was considered a gimmick match. And the more we see it, the less they mean. And that's the way one way of looking at that deal. I have a few more thoughts that we will bring you. But first, folks, the long wait is over. Football season is here. Hallelujah, brothers and sisters. And no one's happier than me. Sure, I like to watch the pros, but you know where my heart is. It's in Oklahoma with those Oklahoma Sooners. And I never miss a game, home or away. But I'll tell you what makes watching the pros a little bit more exciting for me. That's playing fantasy football at DraftKings.com. And you need to jump on this if you want to win a piece of the $5 million DraftKings is awarding during week one $5 million kickoff bash. That's right, DraftKings, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, is giving away $5 million. So take all that research you put together for your season-long fantasy team and use it to win instant cash week one at DraftKings.com. So don't miss out on the action. Go to DraftKings.com right now, enter promo code JIM, and you'll get free entry into the week one $5 million kickoff bash. That's a free shot at winning your share of $5 million. And when you do, I expect a gift. That's a joke. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. So enter Jim for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's J-I-M, and that'd be my first name, at DraftKings.com.
Hey everybody, I'm Bruce Buffer, the voice of Mixed Martial Arts. On September 2nd, it's time for you to listen to my podcast on Podcast One. It's Time, a weekly broadcast exclusively on Podcast One, where I will talk about popular culture, business, and of course the greatest sport on the planet, Mixed Martial Arts. Plus, along with me will be my co-host and MMA journalist, TJ DeSantis, and some of the biggest names in the world of mixed martial arts. On September 2nd, it's time with me, the Voto, Bruce Buffer, exclusively on PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
This is the Ross Report.
A lot of things to continue to talk about here this week. We'll bring Stan Hansel in just a moment. Don't worry, you're getting all of that interview. You're not going to be shorted a thing. And it's good, let me tell you. How many of you have been keeping up with Lucha Underground? It's getting ready to start happening. They changed the name from Lucha Uprising to Lucha Underground. And it's an interesting concept, I'm told. The concept's going to be kind of interesting. But they're going to be taping their television shows in Los Angeles. And I think right now I've been told they got 39 episodes for season one. That's a lot of work. So wish them good luck. Lucha Underground. It's going to begin, I'm told, on my notes, which is kind of squiggly. It's going to air on Wednesday nights. I do know that. October the 8th when it starts on the El Rey Network. It will be broadcast in English. A Spanish broadcast will also air on Unimas, that's Univision's sister station, on Saturdays. So that's a good deal. I'm happy for Krista Joseph, who's involved in the production of this extravaganza. Wish him nothing but the best. A lot of guys... The former John Morris and John Hennigan is on this roster. Chavo Guerrero, Sean Hernandez, Ezekiel Jackson, but they won't call him that. Angela Fong, who is Savannah. Maxine in WWE, Carly Perez. So they're building a nice roster. And then you add in the guys from AAA like Conan, Blue Demon Jr., Phoenix, Drago, and so on and so forth. You're doing all right. So we'll see how they do. I hope they do well. So it's another wrestling show to support, so check it out. Lucha Underground will be airing on Wednesday nights, October the 8th. El Rey Network, check your local listings to see if you get El Rey on your cable company. I bet you do, and you just haven't watched it yet. But, well, we'll hope everything goes well with that. That should be a fun show. So, Impact Wrestling. You know, I guess the big deal is that a new TV rights deal is at the center of their world right now. Spike, as you know, has extended in America TNA Impact Wrestling till the end of the year. And then at the end of the year, they have to find or be on air with another network. And there's a lot of rumor that there's networks out there that are looking at them, smaller networks. But, you know, that's all right. As long as they're on basic cable and you can find them, the wrestling fan will find the show. And Impact can make an impact with some a smaller cable network that needs a shot in the arm on the prime time or that they, you know, Friday night or, you know, now you got to figure out what night you're going to run. But keep it on Wednesday, right? What's that hurt? I kind of like Wednesday nights because Thursdays I'm watching football. Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't think of any reason, unless it was a really bad football game, for me not to want to watch football on Thursday night. And the NFL, because of the money, the bookers in the NFL have booked some pretty good games on Thursday night so that we can, you know, more readily invest in that programming. So Impact moving to Wednesday, I don't think it's a bad move. And maybe not a bad idea to stay there if they lease Spike, which still is yet to be determined. But I do think that Impact will find a cable home, which I think is great news. Ring of Honor, nothing really major on their front. You know, it seems as if the management found their comfort zone. And some people there seemingly are happy to stay within it. I'm not a big comfort zone guy myself, as you probably know. I'd assume that this isn't accurate, but I'm just assuming. So I'm making an ass out of you and me by assuming. But it appears at times that Sinclair Broadcasting, the parent company of Ring of Honor, wishes that they had never bought the brand by the way you look at their show. Are you kidding me? It's not that hard to fix. And the problem continues. It's called a lighting grid. Call a lighting company. Light up those kids that are busting their ass for you and taking crazy bumps and doing everything in the world so they can get a "This is awesome" chant. At least light them where we can see them. So there you hear that. Lucha Underground news, Ring of Honor, Impact. It's all about talent and television. A very wise and rich man once told me, JR, it's all about talent and television, pal. And he was right. And speaking of talent, when we come back, I'll be joined by the legendary Stan Hansen. But first, I am now a true 100% believer in DDP and DDP yoga. On that, I swear. And you want to know why? Because I've witnessed firsthand what my friend Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP yoga folks have done for some of my buddies, guys that I know that have been and are in the wrestling business. You know, when we got a chance to talk to Jake Roberts in person about the impact that Dallas Page and DDP yoga had on Jake's life, it was life-altering. It was life-saving. And there are thousands of regular folks that are saying the very same thing. They may not be celebrities. They may not be pro wrestling stars. They may not be Hall of Famers. But they've tried DDP yoga, and they say it's the real deal. So this DDP yoga thing is a shoot, folks. It's a good deal. I'm proud to have Dallas as a sponsor on our podcast. His yoga is great for everyone at any age, any fitness level. If you go to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross, here's what you get. You get 30% off the retail price. Simply using that slash, Jim Ross will save you 30% off the retail price. It's a great deal on a product that has proved to change lives. So check it out now at ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross. That's my name, folks, J-I-M-R-O-S-S.
The Ross Report with Jim Ross.
Excited this week about having Stan Hansen on our show. Been looking forward to this for a long time. A legendary figure. And, you know, the term legend is thrown around a little bit too carelessly sometimes. But I got no problem saying that the man I'm going to talk to here is a legend in my mind because of what he's accomplished in our business. So, Stan, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking time to be on it.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I appreciate you calling, and I'm glad somebody out there still remembers me.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'll tell you, I went on Twitter, and I think I got maybe almost 1.2 million Twitter followers. And I went on there and said, hey, I'm going to be talking to Stan Hansen. And the thing about it is that it was a lot of questions, but there was a cluster of questions that was asked over and over and over. So, anyway.
Is Stan Hansen's nose as red as they portray it in Japan?
Yeah, that's good. Japan is a part of this interview, but I wanted to ask you, do you consider yourself a Texan?
Yeah, I do. I lived outside of, 3 years of high school. I actually graduated from Las Cruces, New Mexico high school. But I was raised in and around Texas. I moved a little bit, a little small town, Knox City, North Abilene, in between Wichita Falls and Lubbock, out in the middle of nowhere. And then I moved to Dallas for a couple of years. I lived in Frayona a year, and then, of course, I came back to West Texas and went to college.
Well, where in the hell did you play high school football?
At Las Cruces High School in Las Cruces, New Mexico, right under where New Mexico State is.
Right. So you were a high school linebacker, is that right?
I was. I was the linebacker and a center my junior year, and then they moved me to tackle my senior year on offense, but I played middle linebacker the whole time.
How big were you as a high school middle linebacker?
I was, about my height, I guess. Maybe I was about 6'2", 205.
Wow. Well, playing a linebacker would indicate that you could run a little bit, and being an offensive guard that could run or pull, back in those days when the running game was more vibrant than it is today in the NFL,
right.
A pulling guard like Jerry Kramer of the Packers back in the day, for example, it was worth they got paid pretty good money because that was a good skill.
That's right, and I was kind of the backup deep snapper anyway. I could always make the deep snap, and even when I went up a couple of years and tried out pro football, I hung around a little bit because I could make the deep snap.
Yeah, wearing more than one hat, not being one-dimensional, smart. That's country logic, man.
Yeah.
So you got out of West Texas with a degree, and I'm under the impression your degree was in education.
That's right, yep.
So you got your degree in education. But what I'm wondering, before we leave Canyon, I was talking to Terry Funk the other day because I'm working on this.
You can't believe a whole lot he said.
Yeah, well, I took everything in a grain of salt. He just turned 70.
I know it. Terry's the guy that broke me in. I mean, he's a great friend of mine. We competed against each other in Japan, but that's another story. I mean, it was a real competition, and everything, but we're still close and tight, and I really appreciate what he's done for me to get me in this business.
He's a genius, man.
I think he is.
He's like Hunter S. Thompson. He's eccentric. He's got an amazing mind for the rest of it. Oh yeah. Yeah, he maybe is. He ain't figured out how to download anything yet, though. If he thinks it costs him any money, he's damn sure not going to do it.
Yeah, that's right. That's why he's a genius.
Yes, well, there you go. He learned early on, and a lot of the guys didn't in the rest of the business. You can't spend more than you make.
That's right.
How did you end up from Las Cruces High over to Canyon?
I made All-State, and, you know, I was a pretty good high school football player, and got a few offers, and there's a number of schools that were really interested in me, but I had kinfolk in Canyon, and there's a number of reasons why I ended up going to West Texas, but that was some of it, and I wanted to get back to Texas, and I'd always dreamed probably of playing for the University of Texas, but I didn't have that kind of talent and everything, but anyway,
good opportunity to come back to your roots,
right?
And the fact that people got to understand that even though the university's name has changed to West Texas A&M today,
right?
But this football program had a very solid tradition. This was not just some ham and egger college football program because it had one of the most unique head coaches in college football history.
Oh, that's the next thing out of my mouth is that the coach, Joe Kerbel, was just he was really a genius at football. I mean, he had a lot of different offers, I heard later, from the pro, because he ran a pro offense. He ran the Dallas Cowboys offense, and, he was just and he recruited a lot of people, he recruited the first blacks, that came to that part of Texas. And, Pistol Pete Pedro and Hank Washington and guys like that were just, great, great talents and just, set the whole country on fire down there. And then later, of course, Dwayne Thomas, Murphy Morris, like you mentioned. And, there's Rocky Thompson, who was a first-round draft choice for the Giants, and they've had a lot of great, great football players. And but anyway, Joe Kerbel was a unique individual. He was about 5'8" and weighed about 400 pounds. He was an ex-Marine, drill sergeant, somebody, I think. And I mean, he treated us like I got to be careful here. He treated us like dogs sometimes, but he loved his dogs. And
yeah, there you go.
He would stand up for us in any kind of situation, from Bruiser Brody and Dusty Rhodes and everybody. He would stand up for his boys, but he was a unique individual, and I tell you, he was the most dynamic person that I ever met to this day.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, man, as many miles as you've traveled, because I read today where you had made over 100 trips flying over to Japan.
Oh, it's way more than that. It's getting close to 200 now, I guess. But,
God.
Anyway.
It ain't an easy life.
Traveling was tough. And, of course, it was tough on the road inside the United States, too. You had
sure.
To 700 miles sometimes from Houma, Louisiana to Tulsa. And,
yep.
Sunday night to Monday night.
I'm with you.
And
I've done that New Orleans to Oklahoma City run on Thursday to Friday before.
Right.
And as a referee, when the most I knew I was going to make was $40.
That's right. We all had to pile into the Alamo Plaza in Shreveport.
That's right.
$5.50 a night.
There you go, brother. Hey, I tell people that, and they think that I am BSing them to hell. Then I have somebody on the show that is verifying my Alamo Plaza stories. And I used to stay with Hodge and Akbar.
That's right.
And heal into a room, and they'd give me the bedspread. And now after they've been doing all them TV specials on, you know, investigation of what's all this residue on the bedspreads, I just wrap myself in like a swaddling cloth of a baby Jesus or something. God Almighty.
Yeah, you put your blinders on and roll up in the covers, man.
That's
and,
it.
Like I said, oftentimes I slept three. We'd throw the mattress down, and there'd be three of us on the box spring mattress, you know, in a little old 5x10 room, you know. But
so Joe Kerbel, did he treat everybody alike? Because
you know, he did. You know, let me tell you. You know, like I said, you know, you look back almost to the T. Everybody that played for Joe Kerbel, through guys before me, and then of course I was the last class. He, you know, I was the last class. But everybody has fond memories of playing for Joe Kerbel. It was a rite of passage, and let me tell you, it wasn't easy. And he ran off a lot of guys, but the guys that stuck around, I think, all became, you know, better individuals in some way or some form through all the hard work, toil, constant mental, just being ragged on, so you have to think under pressure and all this stuff. I mean, he was a great psychologist, too. And like I said, there's a few people that that might hold a, you know, some kind of a negative feeling, but everybody that I knew, especially inside that got into the wrestling business, we all had great memories of playing and being proud to play for Joe Kerbel.
Yeah, Terry Funk said that Joe Kerbel was the craziest son of a bitch that I've ever known. And for Terry, he didn't say it in a, you know, like a mean-spirited way at all. He was saying it in almost reverent terms that of all the people that he's met in the wrestling business and him, and the people that he related to, because Terry's Terry, that for him to, for Joe Kerbel, the 5 foot, 6 or 8 inch, three or 400 pound football coach, ex-Marine at West Texas in Canyon, it stands out in his mind as the most amazing character that he ever knew.
I'm telling you, it was. I mean, you know, I mean, I know they talk, Vince Lombardi was around about that time, and he was a great coach, obviously, and he was a hard-nosed guy and drove people hard and everything. But I tell you, nobody drove nobody, you know, like Joe Kerbel did. I guarantee you that. But he was a great, you know, great guy, and I have a lot of pride in playing for him.
Here's what I'm wondering. The amount of talent, that wrestling talent, that graduated, well, that's not a good term. I know you graduated, Kelly Kaninsky graduated, Tito Santana graduated, and then it gets a little shaky. Of course, Dick Murdoch, God bless him, if he was alive, he would say that he graduated, and he never went to school there. But he did play in the alumni game.
That's true. He did go back and play in an alumni game one time because he was just such an avid supporter of WT and everything and just a great character around Amarillo. I mean, he was a legend right there. I mean, my cousin, who was, you know, was a year older than me, he grew up in Canyon, and that was one of the reasons I ended up back in West Texas. He said he can remember Dick Murdoch as he was the big badass of Amarillo, and he whooped everybody's butt back when he was in high school at Caprock. But, you know, I think he did go to Trinidad Junior College for 1 year and played football there. But after that, I think he got into the wrestling business. But
no, he went to the Marines.
Well, yeah, maybe he went to the Marines.
Yeah.
But I thought he told me, I think he went to Trinidad for 1 year.
Well, I hate to break the news to you, Stan. I think he was telling you a fib. I think he embellished his.
Not Dickie.
Yeah, not Dickie. I think Dickie embellished his athletic career because he had me believing all these years that he was a graduate of West Texas. And a scholarship athlete, and he had turned down UT and some other places because of his grades, or he gave you the damnedest story you ever heard in your life, and it all based on he played in an alumni game.
Well,
which is great. It's a great story. It reminds me of watching that last version of...
He did play in an alumni game.
Yeah, I'm with you. But he's building a whole story around that one game, a whole career. So it's just great.
It was a hell of a game.
Oh, brother, it was a heck of a game for good old Dickie Murdoch. Classic. Well, what a classic guy.
What a classic guy.
Yeah, man.
A great talent. Probably one of the best big guys, what I call big guy, you know, 300-pound guy.
Yep.
He was definitely, I always say he was the best.
That's
300-pounder there was.
That's a hell of a compliment coming from anybody, coming from you. It's very special for good old Dick. When he was serious, I remember.
Well, he could be serious and he could be a cartoon.
Oh, yeah, he was.
That's the thing, you know. I mean, sometimes that worked against him sometimes, but, you know, you just can't take talent away, you know.
And no.
I mean, he could have them laughing. And then the next minute, they would want to cut his throat.
So, you know,
that's the type of psychology that he had. It's a dying art now. But,
oh, buddy. Yeah, it's dying. Hey, Dickie could sell one punch for 5 minutes.
Right.
And now somebody's listening, some younger kids listening, saying, God almighty, that's boring. So guys,
you know what? I mean, of course, you know, I don't know about what the fans are expecting today. You know, I've been out of it so long, you know, but... Murdoch was one of those great guys. Killer Carl. I mean, there were hundreds. Terry Funk. I mean, all of them.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm refereeing a match one night in Baton Rouge or someplace, and Cox and Murdoch are in the middle of a big program that's going to blow off at the Superdome type thing. You know, a big money main event program scheduled at that time. And I was refereeing, and Murdoch got Cox backed into the corner, and he's doing in the middle of a hot angle where they had color and everything previously. He's in the mood to do that Three Stooges routine. He's like Shemp of the Three Stooges. And so Cox is in the corner, and I'm on the left side because Cox is right-handed. So the next thing you know, Cox hits about six or eight inch right hand, stiffer than a board. Right to Dickie's jaw. And Dickie's legs get all limber, and he starts falling and starts getting ready to go off his feet. And Cox underhooked his arms to hold. It looked like they were dancing in the corner, but they weren't because Murdoch was essentially out. But Cox didn't want him to take a bump. He wanted to keep selling. And so then finally Murdoch says, damn, Walter, why'd you do that? And he said, because we're in a serious-ass angle. It's not time for your comedy. It's not tonight. Tonight we're not doing that. So, but boy, I told this story before. The rest of the night, it looked like a clinic. Because then Cox had kind of got Dickie's attention. And the rest of the night, it was epic. And I'm not kidding you. I'm not exaggerating. It was epic.
Yeah, they were, those two guys, I mean, I put Cox in there too, you know. I wrote a book a few years ago, and I told a bunch of good stories about Murdoch and Cox and a bunch of guys, you know. It's mainly about all those guys that I grew up and I was influenced by and was lucky enough to be broke in around. And I tell you, you know, they had such great psychology that, it was all way over my head at the time. I had no idea what they were thinking or where they were doing it. But the people, they had the people, you know. It was just great to be around people like that really had that ability to just orchestrate the people, you know, to the point of want to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, so, and there were a lot of them. There was a lot of them in the business back then, you know, and I was really fortunate to be broke in Amarillo where there was a lot of great guys, Carl Von Steiger and, you know, Moose Morawski and I name those two guys every time because they took me under their wing and, you know, they taught me what to do a little bit, and definitely what not to do.
Exactly.
More than anything.
Exactly.
That was the thing that stuck with me more than anything, you know, and it was just, it was just great. And of course, Terry Funk, you know, and Dick. I mean, like I said, everybody you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it's a gold mine of knowledge, experience. They were great heels. They were great baby faces. And Dory Sr. was a serious promoter that wanted you to come out there and have athletic competitions so people didn't see through crap, because he was a proud guy in the business.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't entertainment to him. It was a sport.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the way I look at it, too. I mean, I know it's all evolved, and, you know, and it's, I mean, wrestling's wrestling forever, but you know what? I mean, it was definitely, you know, I always thought of it as a sport. You know, I've had 13 operations. If it wasn't a sport, if it wasn't somewhat real, then by God, you know, I'd be just, you know,
Skipping
rope and everything else, you know.
I mean, you had both, would you have both knees replaced?
Both knees, both shoulders.
Golly.
I got four, and I need a wrist. But I'm okay. I'm all right. I feel good.
That's amazing. Well, you know, that's dedication, and that's, I just don't think some guys, even the guys in the business, and certainly a lot of the fans, don't realize the sacrifices that generations have made to pave the way for some of these guys and their schedule and the monies they make and the fact they get royalty checks and they get T-shirt money and video game money and publishing money and all those things. You guys were making virtually all your money from what you did bell to bell.
Yeah, for the house show.
Exactly.
It was, I mean, if the house went up, then maybe you might get an extra 10.
Yeah.
You know, if you're on the fourth match, you know, you might get an extra 50 or something in the main event. I don't know. I wasn't in the main event too much. But anyway, you know, everything was, you know, was all off of the house show and how well you got the people to come back the next time, you know.
First time I saw you work in person was when you came in to work for Bill in Mid-South,
right,
back in the mid-70s. And was that
it
your...
It wasn't Mid-South then. It was Oklahoma Territory, right?
Yeah, it was Championship Wrestling or something. It's some benign, non-marketable, you know, generic name, which was quite frankly reminiscent of the old-school promoters who believed in, if it wasn't broke, don't fix it. Even though we know how we can make it better and make it everybody more money and create more opportunities by branding, we're just going to keep this stuff generic. I could do a whole show on the lack of promotion in pro wrestling. It's not even – it's embarrassing. But nonetheless, you went to work for Bill. What's your take on working for the Cowboy?
Well, let me tell you. The last time I asked somebody to book me, I asked Dory Funk Jr., who had just lost the heavyweight championship, you know, and he was back in the territory, and I asked him, can you book me out? And I heard that Portland, and you know, in Amarillo, it was a long, a lot of long trips and everything. I said, I heard about Portland from Carl Von Stoger, and short trips, you leave at 5 o'clock every night, you know, and everything sounded good. I like to go anywhere except Louisiana. And about 3 days later, he called me up. Well, you start in Shreveport. In about 4 days, and I went, God, that was the last time I asked anybody to ever book me.
Yeah.
Anyway, he probably couldn't get me booked anywhere except there. But that's beside the point. But anyway, I went there, and Bill wasn't there at the time. Grizzly was the booker. And Rip Tyler were the booker. They were like
little
bookers.
Oh, yeah. That was a – God almighty. You talk about dysfunctional.
Yeah. I mean, there was two different groups inside everything. There was Rip's group, and then there was Grizz's group. And because – anyway, I guess somehow I got hooked up with Grizz's group, and Brody was there just starting out and everything, and over from Fritz. And anyway, that's where I started working for, and then Watts came in about 6 months or something later.
Yeah.
And everything changed, you know. It was all, and he brought in the really good talent. He brought in Murdoch and Waldo Von Erich and the guy, I mean, the Spoiler and, I mean, all these guys. I mean, they were great talent, you know, to start with. But we were kind of getting pushed. Brody and I were getting pushed a little bit as just a young, wild team, right, by Grizzly.
Yeah.
And we just got, you know, kicked to the back thing. And but, you know, looking back now, at the time it hurt my feelings. And it really tainted Brody. But it you know, I knew it was – I eventually just said, you know, it's just business. I didn't hold a big grudge. But anyway, but the talent, I mean, you know, the talent that he brought in, I mean, was just unbelievable talent. I mean, Murdoch Cox, Spoiler.
That had to help you.
You know, Dr. X, I mean, Waldo Von Erich. I mean, my God. You know, so, you know, and of course they were drawing big time. And we were up on, you know, in Wichita Falls.
Oh, yeah.
And those spot shows.
Joplin.
You were working, I think.
Yeah.
Weren't you from Arkansas? I thought you were right over it.
I was on the border of Oklahoma, in Oklahoma, but about a mile from the Arkansas border. I was 25 miles east of Fayetteville, where University of Arkansas is. But I was on the edge. I was in... they call
you had
it
a Western store, didn't you?
Yeah, I did at one time. It was a, you know, that was a tough time to be in the territory. Bill not being there, it was kind of unorganized. There's a little bit of martial law, kind of a Wild West. There's a lot of partying going on in southern Louisiana, and then when you got booked into the northern end, it was like you're being punished.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly how we felt it. We were punished.
Is it true that when you went to West Texas and on your recruiting visit, when you finally got to see the dorms, that you the guy showing you around showed you his room, and Goodish was still asleep in the bed, and he was like living in a pigsty with him?
It was about like 3 p.m, and I'd asked, the guy's name was Phil Hampton, and he finally, I said, well, I want to see the dorm. I want to see the room, because I'd been to 4 or 5 colleges. You know, I knew the kind of the routine. I wanted to see what the rooms looked like, right? And finally, about 3 p.m, he says, well, he kind of kept putting it off. Finally, he says, okay. And then he stopped at the door. He says, you know, when you have a roommate, you really don't choose your roommate, or you can't control. You know? He made this big, long speech kind of. And finally, he opens the door up, and you walk in, and on the left side was his side, and it was just spotless. And on the right side, there was just, there was trash, there was daggum, there were no sheets on the bed, nothing, and wadded up underneath some piece of dirty, whatever it was. Frank woke up and said, hey, how you doing, you know, and then went back to sleep. That's the first time I saw Frank Goodish.
he was a classic.
He was.
He was a cerebral guy, you know. He was very well-rounded, and I could see why if you travel with him, you wouldn't be in one-dimensional conversations all the time, because he was pretty well-read.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he actually, you know, he wrote a sports for the Dallas Morning News. He followed high school football, and he actually wrote an article, I think a weekly article or whatever, I don't know, but about high school football for the Dallas Morning News.
That's big, you know. So that's a major newspaper. So
yeah, that's a huge deal. But when
Bill came in, and you and Frank were there working as a team, as you mentioned, how long was he on you right away, or soon thereafter to split up and be singles?
No, I think in the beginning, you know, he. You know, we were teamed up, and we were, you know, for probably about maybe 4, 5, 6 months. I can't remember way back there, but you know, he didn't come in. He just kind of sent us to the north, and you know, the Joplin and Springfield, Oak City,
and
places, and you know, there's basically, you know, we were starving, and you know, Frank and travel with Buck Robley a lot, and you know, they kind of had their, you know, they kind of went their route, and I kind of I had a van. I bought a van, and I was sleeping in my van.
Really?
trying to save money, you know, and everything. But anyway, But yeah, Frank was. I mentioned that earlier this year at up in New York at the Hall of Fame about Frank. You know, he was a smart guy. You know, I mean, I kind of went out and, you know, act and react, and, you know, if you can keep up with me, good. If not, then, you know, so be it, you know. But Frank was the guy that was constantly thinking, constantly, you know, ciphering and thinking and, you know, everything about the business. Plus, I mean, he had a great interest outside, too. And we did. I mean, we did talk a lot about, you know, things besides wrestling.
Yeah.
You know,
was he your favorite partner? And at the end of the day, would you say, I know you team with a lot of amazing talent.
Yeah.
You really did. I mean, so who's who? Which we'll talk about here soon. But looking back at kind of how you started in the dorm room and football field and practice.
We were in New York together, too, and we kind of took on that whole New York establishment back in 76, and he followed me through, you know. I mean, you know, the way they do heels, you know, they bring in one after the other, and he followed me, and so we were kind of teamed up, and we had a few problems with some of the, you know, the babyface teams, and because, you know, we wanted to, you know, try to be in a position to come back and draw some money with Bruno or whoever it might be, right?
So, all right.
You know, I mean, Bruno was going to get his deal, but, you know, I mean, actually, he's the one that told me. He says, take care of yourself, you know. He says, you can come back in 4 or 5 years. So, you know what? I mean, when Bruno tells me something, you know, I appreciate that, and I follow that, and it pissed a lot of people off. Anyway, that's another story. But, yeah, you know, Brody and I were together, and, you know.
I just see a brotherhood there and a kinship that started in college.
Yeah, he was my partner probably for sure, especially at the time. We were both young and young, dumb, and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, crazy. That was a pair to draw to. I can tell you there was just a, you know, looking on YouTube or wherever you want to look, look up Brody and Hanson's tag matches. And we're going to talk about, matter of fact, we'll take a good time to take a break. And we're going to talk about Stan's Japanese career, among other things, right after this very, very brief timeout. TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people have paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho, inviting you to download Talk is Jericho to hear my conversation with Dave Bautista. He's starring in the new Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, the biggest movie of the summer, talking all about that, plus talking about his return to the WWE, Daniel Bryan, the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania 30. It's wrestling, movie making, makeup, and skinny jeans. Bautista on Talk is Jericho. Download it now at podcastone.com.
You're listening to The Ross Report.
I promised that when we came back, we'd talk to Stan Hansen about his career in Japan, which really is legendary. I mean, so Stan, what was can you remember your first trip to Japan? How it got arranged and and the anticipation about flying that far to go to work?
Yeah, you know, by the time when I was going and before, you know, guys would go on a tour, and, I mean, it might last 5 or 6 weeks, but they wouldn't come back to back tour. Guys didn't go and stay the whole time, I mean, for like a year or something. I mean, there might be a few underneath guys. I think Moose Morawski said one time he stayed 6 months when they were first starting out. But before that, it was the Destroyer and people like that went over. Now, Dick ended up having to get in a special position, the Destroyer. But most times, guys would come in for a tour, and then they wouldn't be back till the next year. They'd come back the next year or something.
Yeah.
But as things evolved, you know, guys started coming a little bit more. The Funk started coming a little bit more. Jet Zane started coming. Abdullah started coming, you know, 2 or 3 tours a year. And then, so that's the kind of about the time when I started coming into it. And so Brody and I ended up working into a position where we were both coming to Japan about half the year. We'd get about 3 or 4 tours a year, you know, or something, and that was pretty good. But eventually, because of just the way it worked out, I mean, I ended up going every tour, you know, for about 5 years and everything, and I just quit the States because, you know, that I was going to Japan, and I spent time with my family in between, and
sure,
it was the best of my world. I missed out on all the big money when WWE took off and everything, but that's okay. I mean, good for the guys that made it. You know?
Yeah, and you weren't working for nothing. You were doing really well there.
I was doing okay, but you know, it was nothing. It was nothing compared to what the guys, and especially what the guys end up getting now. I mean, but at the time, you know, they were getting some pretty good, nice contracts and so forth.
Oh yeah.
And everybody, you know, you'd hear about all these big contracts, and they sucked. You know, the Steve Williams, one of my favorite guys, and Terry Gordy, another favorite guy. You know, they got sucked into going over there, but things just didn't seem to work out for those guys once they got back to the States. And I was lucky. I mean, I was happy with where I was, and you know, I mean, so I didn't get caught up in that. And in the long run, it worked out for me.
Yeah, it sure did. And timing is everything, no doubt about it. What kind of guy? I only was around Mr. Bob a couple of times. He was very nice to me, but what kind of guy was he away from wrestling? Just as a human being.
Well, you know, to tell the truth, I was around him a few times, but never in a social environment.
Wow! You
know, I mean, it was strictly business.
Man,
he trusted me, and as a business person, and I ended up trusting him, and I think, you know, I mean, we probably had about 15, 20 conversations over, hey, how you doing, you know, that, you know, if there was something to be discussed, I'd go to him and we'd talk and we'd figure it out and everything. But it was just a business relationship. He was very reserved, very close. You can't read Japanese, almost any of them. You can't really, you don't know what they're thinking.
Uh-huh.
And they hide their, you know, they don't show their emotion and their feeling a whole lot. So, but, I mean, I trusted him, and he trusted me. But before that, I got to mention that Inoki was the guy that actually, you know, gave me an opportunity to push me, and I got in a good, I just got over and started doing really well there. And it just got, I got caught up in, you know, one of these little wars in between All Japan and New Japan, and I really wasn't looking to leave, but you know, it just, that's the way it ended up being. And got a chance to go over and be with Brody, and that excited me, and it excited Brody. You know, I mean, we had been apart for 2 or 3 years then, and you know, it was just a great chance. And then, of course, both of us together, I mean, I can say without a doubt that we were the most dominant tag team ever in Japan, you know.
I couldn't argue that point. Gosh, there was.
I mean, I don't brag a lot, you know. But both of us together for about 2 or 3 years there. I mean, we went out and we took it to them, and the people got with it, and the Japanese had to come off their ass to fight us, and you know they didn't lay down for us either, but. You know, it was a real battle to see who was going to be on top. And then you mix in the Fonks, who were the old, you know, not the old, but they were the established Gachin team. They didn't want to take second notice to us either. So, you know, there were some real, I mean, it was some real contest going on.
Good competition. Good company. Everybody want to steal the show, That's what athletes do. They compete.
Yeah.
And even though it's showbiz, I get that. But
it's showbiz, but there was real competition.
Damn right.
I mean, Terry Funk would come in the building, and there would be about 25 people in the whole building. And he'd turn and go down the hall, and I'd come running, and I'd just drill him. I mean, I would drill him hard with the forearm in the back.
Yeah.
Just knock his ass down in it like almost. You come up, he said, "What the hell?" You know, I mean, that's just the way it was. I don't know. I was stupid, really, to be doing something like that because nobody even saw it. I mean, 10 people might have seen it, some of the guys. But, you know, that was just the way it was.
Hey, when you look at your tag team partners, Brody, Terry Gordy, Ted DiBiase, Tenru, Dan Spivey, Bobby Duncombe Jr., and Vader, just to name some of them.
Yeah. Wow. And Baba. Yeah. I was actually up with Baba in his later days, you know, and we had some great matches, you know, and, I mean, you know, but he was a real businessman. He never let the ego stand in the way, you know, and, but anyway, he was, I mean, the people loved him when we were together and, you know, for a couple of years, and it was nice, you know. But Danny Spivey, I mean, he was one of my favorite partners, you know. And, of course, Teddy and, you know, Terry, I mean, they're all just such great talent, you know. I mean, just talent-wise, they're all better than me. All I could do is just run from pillar to post. But, they, you know, those guys, you know, had a lot of talent.
Ted DiBiase was on this show, Stan, and he said that when you came to him and wanted to see if he wanted to be your partner, that he was, it was the most amazing moment for him in his career because of the respect he had for you and your position in Japan and you being willing to step up and say, I'll be your partner. Because somebody, maybe Frank had left, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Frank had left.
So Bruiser Brody had left to go across the street, so to speak, with the opposition, and then Teddy got to step in, and you guys really, I don't want to say you didn't miss a beat, but the matches I saw with you and DiBiase were excellent.
Well, you know, Teddy is such a great, you know, I hate to use the term scientific, whatever the hell that is, but anyway, he was more of a wrestler type of, you know, in the mold of the Junior Jack Briscoe, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, he could do a lot of, you know, a lot of good stuff like that, and then I could go in and be my style, and so there was like, you know, plus and minus there that I think that added to it. But you know, Teddy being the type of talent he was, you know, was really good.
Yeah, I think he's so underrated by a lot of people. Here's the thing about it is, same thing with the Mr. Bob. I got a question about Mr. Bob. A lot of people in today's world only have seen Mr. Baba in those late in his career comedy matches.
Right.
And not in the serious wrestling. I went back and saw a match when he was young, working with a young Dick Beyer.
Right.
Now, Dick Beyer's in his 80s right now.
Yeah, he's...
I'm talking about a young guy.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole hell of a lot of difference when Father Time ain't tapping you on the shoulder.
Right.
So I thought it was pretty good. I have read where Baba said that you were one of his favorite opponents, And I am knowing you that when you guys did work, just because he was the boss didn't mean you were going to let up.
You know, one time, just real quick story about how I didn't look at him. So I wasn't feared him being the boss. I should have been if I'd been smart, but I've never been accused of being smart. But anyway, I had the belt, I think, at the time, and he was over in his corner, and I was, you know, just doing whatever I do, you know, and I just got up and I picked up the belt and I just threw it right at him, you know, and I thought he had at least ducked, but God, he didn't duck or nothing, and the belt just smacked him in the face right before the start of the match, and he went down, and I mean, he had real juice. I had to go over there and just start stomping on him, you know. I said, God. Anyway, never complained, never cried. Obviously he had arthritis and a lot of other issues physically, but he never, I mean, those Japanese guys used to bump the crap out of him, you know, even in the cartoon match. When we were teamed up, we went against Mizawa and Kawada and those guys. I mean, God, they bumped Baba like crazy, and the people really got with it because, you know, he never quit, you know, and they knew what he looked like, but he never gave up. He never complained. You know, he always went out and did his deal. I thought he was really great.
What a lesson for guys that may be listening about being a babyface.
Yeah.
You never give up and you never quit. And people, if you do those things, they will forgive you for losing a match as long as you didn't quit on them.
You know, let me tell you, I mean, that's the deal. You know, to me, I don't follow what's going on now, so I'm not making a pick on anything, but I guarantee you if you want to get over, if you want to be strong, I mean, you know, as a baby face, then you better lay down, and you better not lay down, but you better just know how to sell. If you can sell, you can get over. But, you know, all these guys, and I mean, in my time, a lot of the baby faces started feeling like they had to be super strong. They thought that would make them stronger. But, you know, it's the psychology is the people, the most excited the people really get in a whole match is when the baby face is getting stomped to the point of getting beat. That's the most excited. It's not when the baby face makes the comeback. Oh, that's a little rise. But the most excitement, the most fear, the most adrenaline is going when that baby face is getting stomped, and by God, he's fixing to get beat.
Yeah, that's the drama. That's when you're concerned, and if you give a damn about the baby face at all, you're just absolutely overwhelmed with concern that
right.
He's getting his gut stomped out. Now, a guy that liked to do the, you know, that was be strong. Speaking of being strong, was Hulk Hogan. I wasn't really plugged into that whole WWF and All Japan stuff in 1990. They did the big show in the Superdome, and you work with Hogan. Now, you're representing All Japan at the time, right? All Japan in 1990?
I was. You know, that was a kind of a weird deal. You know, Terry Gordy was supposed to work against Hogan. I wasn't even on the card. And, you know, I was there. But... you know, Baba didn't even know. I was married, actually, at that time to a Japanese lady, and I was at her house because I was off for 3 or 4 days. And Baba had to call my dad, and he says, I'm trying to find Stan. Do you know where he's at? And it's cool. So he told him where it was. And anyway, he called. He could not believe it. I've been married 3 years, and I hid it from everybody, you know, because I didn't want it to be a big deal. But anyway... so Bob asked me, I guess they had a problem between Gordy and, you know, for whatever, and he says, can you come? And this is like the day before. I mean, 2 days before the Dome. And
I imagine the Vance was good, right?
No, the Vance wasn't anything, actually.
Oh.
But in 2 days, you know, they ended up doing, you know, about two-thirds of a house. You know, in a couple of days, I went to some kind of press conference and said I was going to take on Hogan, you know. And, you know, Hogan was great. I mean, I thought he was, you know, I mean, he was over.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He was, he's, and you know they just got WWE just went to Japan and he got a big reception.
Yeah.
They remember the glory days.
Yeah.
He had a hell of a run in Japan. So you did the honors for Hogan on that night. Was there any talk, because it was kind of the rumor that, you know, it worked out well and Hogan liked it and McMahon was interested in you coming to WWF at the time. Was there anything to that rumor or was that just wrestle talk?
He thanked me and he actually, sent me a little bonus and everything, which I never expected or anything. And, he just said, when you get ready to leave Japan, give me a call. And
that's nice to have in your pocket.
Yeah, but I never left. I never thought I'd leave.
It wasn't really a consideration.
I was, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the career was pretty amazing. The match that I watched that I thought was absolutely amazing was that match with you and Leon Vader, where Leon's eye popped out?
Yeah,
golly,
that was a real deal.
Well, now what was? Now look, I've heard a million wrestler stories about this thing that you all had legit heat and you potatoed him and.
Well, I potatoed him and he potatoed me, but there wasn't any kind of there wasn't any heat.
I got you.
I'd known Leon a long time and. Yeah, I hurt his eye, and I regret that. But God, he hurt me 40 times before that. So that's just part of it.
What a match! Somebody, if you haven't seen, Stan, did you guys work that much, that many times?
No, we didn't. And in fact, the WCW when I went in there, they just threw us into a match in Phoenix. Years later, because they said. Oh, y'all had this big match, in Tokyo Dome. Everybody talked, we're going to put you together in some kind of pay-per-view in Phoenix. And
well, what was supposed to happen there was the angle was supposed to start the intrigue, and then when they were supposed to do other things to heat it up, and it was a basic angle that was shot in Japan, and they're going to get the footage. They're going to put it on American television. That they're going to back it up with some more collision, but not enough to give it away, and then have the pay-per-view and have the quote-unquote blow-off. But it was so WCW, Stan, was so dysfunctional, so crazy. And I was there.
I went into WCW at that time when Ole was booking.
Yeah.
And then Ole got fired, and about halfway through it, and I was just kind of hanging on, and I'd already knew that my time was numbered, and they throw this together, and they were kind of wanting to do a little more funny stuff. They put a bunch of cartoon type of stuff.
No, I know.
I wasn't into it, that wasn't me, and not that there's not a place for that, but that wasn't for me.
I got you.
So anyway, I'd already had my exit. I think before I had that match with Leon.
Didn't they want you to do some sort of team or the Desperado?
Well, they had Randy Colley. Oh,
was Black Bart in that group?
Yeah, Black Bart and the guy with the big beard, really good talent.
Dutch Mantel?
Yeah, Dutch Mantel, And they were like... Where's Stan Hansen? I mean, they were doing this whole thing, where they were called the Desperados, and I don't know, they were looking for me, and I have no idea. It was somebody's idea, but, I already knew that wasn't going to fly because
yeah.
I wasn't going to be a cartoon.
Yeah, you're going to go back to what you knew and what. Yeah. Hey, what, when somebody, they use the term the Japanese strong style, in your own definition, what does it mean?
I just think it was just extremely solid. It was hard. I think I was in part of the change from the American style wrestling into the Japanese style wrestling. And, it was just much more intense, much more nonstop, much more physical. I mean, it was really physical, you know, and I mean, you know, it was hard. I mean, it was really hard, you know, physically to go out there and do that, especially once the Japanese got the hot shot up their butt that, you know what, these Americans are going to run over us, so we're going to have to fight. And, you know, all those young guys that I fought for All Japan, for Baba's group, Kawada, Mazawa, you know, Kobashi, those guys fought me like crazy. And, I mean, I fought them like crazy to keep them down, but they eventually got over me. And when they did, you know, the people believed them because, you know, I'd beat the crap out of them, and they ended up beating me up. But anyway, so I guess that's the strong style, you know, that I was involved in, and there was numerous other guys too. But you know, Terry Funk and I had some knockdown, drag out matches too. You know that. You know, I mean, they were 90% real.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's all you can say.
Well, I missed a lot of that Misawa Kobayashi stuff, but boy, those guys are they're perpetual motion. They lay their stuff in. And everything they do seems to make common sense and be logical.
Right.
And I got to think that they learned a lot of that working with you, because you're not going to do any nonsense. You're not going to do spots just for the hell of doing spots. And why would you leave your feet if you didn't have to?
Right.
That's what I don't understand about guys. Well, I like these kids nowadays, these Ring of Honor kids and others, you know, they got to do all the Mexican flying stuff and the Lucha Libre stuff and. And,
well, you know, I'm going to tell you, in the end, even those guys, they ended up, you know, going more towards the, you know, big, long, drawn-out, you know, spots. God, I hate to say it.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, act and react. I think that's what made me successful. Is people didn't know what I was going to do. Because I didn't know what I was going to do until I decided to do something. And then their reaction was a real reaction because they didn't know. And then, you know, I would react off of their reaction. You know, so I think that's kind of can that be done from every match on in? I don't know. But, you know, I think that a few people could go in there and they could get people really into it. Without it looking like some choreographed, you know, action movie that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I remember ugliness, talking about ugliness in matches. We had that blow-off match with you and Lex Luger for the U.S. title in a bull rope match. In the Kiel. And that's the first time I'd ever announced a match in the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis.
Right, yeah.
Big deal for me. It's kind of cool. It was December, Starrcade.
Oh, really? I don't remember that one.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's all right. Here's what I remember.
I'm not saying it didn't happen, but that doesn't stick.
Well, it was a night that Ric Flair was a black scorpion. and it was awful. It was a very strange night, to say the least. But here's what I remember. I'm pretty sure Heyman worked with me. And we're sitting at ringside in this little table, butted up right to the ring. And you got Luger over in our corner, just happened to be our corner, and right above us. And I remember you laying something in, and I don't know if it was the rope or your forearm or your fist or a kick or whatever it was, but whatever it was very, very solid. And I remember Luger saying, "God damn, Stan. God damn." And it's like he was trying to get your attention, but it was. And when I heard it, I started talking louder because I didn't want it to be heard through my microphone that the champion or the challenger, the hero who's trying to regain his title against this big, bad, tobacco-chewing, loud-talking, bull-rope-waving son of a gun.
Such a pretty guy.
Yeah, man. Golly. Hey, somebody sent me a picture the other day on Twitter. Me interviewing you in Atlanta, and you were dripping tobacco. I mean, you had a chaw that Murdoch would have envied, and it was dripping all over yourself. And I was making a face like, I hope this damn stuff don't get all over me, man. This is going to ruin my suit. It was that you were classic in that situation. Absolutely classic.
You know, that to me, that's when I realized, you know, that Ole, I think Ole was still there. He was trying to get me to calm it down a little bit, but you know, the people at wherever Turner and them, they were saying, you know, that he's just too nasty. You know, that's just too nasty. You know, and everything. But Bob Armstrong said he had been down in Alabama, working in Alabama or someplace, and he says, "God, Stan, the only thing they talk about is you." and how they want you to come down there, and the thing is, I wanted to be a real heel, because
yep.
what had happened was that everybody starts hearing the people start cheering for them, and then all of a sudden they quit being the bad guy and they want to be the, you know, yep. Well, you know, God. People like me, and all of a sudden I didn't want anybody to cheer for me. And I mean, a lot of times the guys would get up and go Stan, go, and I just spit right in their daggum face, and they'd turn around and they'd be cussing me in the next second. And I said, you know, that's the way I wanted to be.
Exactly.
And, of course, that was a little extreme. I guess you look back on it now and everything. But
well, you know, that's what. Hey, there's guys. Here's what I said on this show, and you tell me if I'm on the right trail or not. I'm saying, I know you don't watch a lot of wrestling, or any or whatever level. I say that it's harder today to be a heel than at any other time in the history of the pro wrestling business, because the promoters have gotten lazy, the talent has forgotten a lot of fundamentals, and there are no rules to break. So what makes you a heel? What makes you a heel? You don't have any rules to break. How are you a bank robber if there are no banks to rob?
Right.
And the clenched fist is a legal maneuver, just as legal as a headlock. So you can strike a guy in the face with your clenched fist, and it's legal. And I say that's stupid, because it's a huge expose of the business.
Right.
You can't hit somebody in the face multiple times, time and time and time and time again, and not black an eye or bust somebody open or break your hand or something. I mean, God almighty.
You know, going way back there, back, and one of the things I was taught probably by Steiger or Murawski or Terry Funk or somebody, but he said, you know, if you hit somebody three times and he doesn't go down, or he just stands there and shakes his head and glares at you, then you know what? Those people are going to be driving home in about 2 hours, and they'll be thinking, you know what? That must not really hurt. You know, so... You know, to me, you know, if a guy hits me once, twice, and he wants to be super strong, then forget it. Now I'll kick him,
Yeah.
I'm not going to, to me, that is the expose.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely an expose. And talent, because they're so insecure about their inability that they know they have. Their inability to work like an old school guy with great fundamentals and psychology, they don't have psychology, they only have sensationalism.
Right.
So how many flips can they do? How many ways can they figure to splat their body on the concrete so the crowd can chant, you know, holy shit, whatever it is.
Wow.
It's they've lost the art of what the hell they're doing. Hey, I was just wondering, you've made almost 200 trips to Japan from the States. So what is your airline of choice, and how many frequent flyer miles did you have at your best?
Well, I've flown over 1 million miles on Delta Airlines, and I've probably got about 500 now on American, you know.
Did you earn the big level frequent flyer award for all the miles that you did?
No, I didn't, I didn't. I went for 30 years, That was my deal over a long period of time, five or six times. I used to fly Delta when I lived, in Mississippi and out in Colorado. But here in Texas, I fly American because it's nonstop.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yes, they're both good airlines. And
they're both good airines. I flew JL a ton of times, too. Actually, I had a lot of miles with JL and Northwest. God, I had them for everybody, you know.
Oh, I bet. Did you take your cowboy boots off when you flew across the seas?
No, but I go in now. I got smart about halfway through it. I'd go in and change into some coaching shorts and something really comfortable in the dressing in the bathroom before we took off, and I stayed in that until we started to approach.
That had to be a classic. You know, 300-pound man in a lavatory changing clothes and coming out.
Tight.
Oh yeah, there's a little noise and they're bumping around, and so that should be good. Let me ask you: you got two knees, two shoulders, knee to wrist. Other than that, you're feeling good. Last time I saw you, you looked great, actually.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, I believe in corrective surgery. You know, I got my knees done, 14 years ago. I did them both at the same time, so I didn't have to go through it twice. And they did real good. And then my shoulders got bad. Probably more from anything. I mean, my right shoulder from the throwing the baseball. I was coaching two teams for about 5 years, little league teams. And anyway, but yeah, I got those done, and you know, so I'm basically pretty much pain free.
Good.
And
good.
You know, I feel pretty healthy.
I saw you once since, but I remember seeing you at Doc's funeral.
Right.
And you looked great. And I remember.
Well, I've been called looking a lot of things, but never great.
Well, you did. I thought you looked great. I really did, because. That strong style that you were a warrior in Japan, and you were the yard marker. I mean, you were the benchmark that a lot of guys that go to Japan today, that's what, you know. I talked to a lot of young American kids. Well, man, I want to be like Stan Hansen. They want that longevity, and you know, and I'm thinking, you know, Stan kept his word. Stan was he managed his own career. He didn't blame other people for getting him, but you know, he was his own man, and you made all that amazing career in Japan, and I'm sure you had a chance on multiple times to jump for a lot more money, or come back. And you know, all it begins is a chain, because you jump over here, you make X, and then the guys want you back, and they give you 2X and or whatever. But you always were very loyal to Bob. It seemed to me.
Like I said, I appreciate Noki giving me that original, you know, opportunity. But it was Giant Baba who I ended up working with. And, I mean, we had a contract for like 3 years, and then that contract expired. And it was nothing but a handshake for the next 25. And,
that's amazing.
You know, until he passed away, you know, everything. And Ms. Baba treated me really nice, too, in the few years that she ran it and everything. But I physically had retired at that time, but anyway, you know, Jim, I appreciate you saying a lot of nice things about me. I had a lot of great opponents. I mean, I had some great partners, but let me tell you, you know, you're nothing without an opponent, and I had some great opponents that were hungry, and they fought, and they weren't scared to, you know, be business, you know, about everything, but they fought, and you're only as good, like I said, as your opponent. And I was really lucky to have some great young good Japanese talent in Japan, and that I think that was my longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I just had those great guys coming along.
Well, Baba knew that if they could get guys, people to believe that they actually beat you, that it would make the kid, make the young guy, because you were such a fixture there. I was going to ask you, because he always spoke highly of you, almost in a hero worship way.
Who's this?
Dr. Death.
Oh, God.
He just, when he talked to me, you know, when he talked about you, you were the guy he wanted to be, and he wished he hadn't made some of the mistakes he had made, and so forth and so on. But no one I ever knew had any better heart. He was a good-hearted guy.
Oh, great heart. I mean, let me tell you, Steve Williams, one of my favorite guys. I mean, he really is. I mean, as a person, you know, as a talent, you know, as somebody that's just super strong, Steve Williams was the strongest guy I knew. He was the most physically strong guy in the business, you know. I mean, he was a real horse. But what a great guy, just a great guy. And we were connected through a number of things, you know, a lot of, you know, ups and downs in our career and just, you know, whatever. But also through our faith in Christ. And you know, I just thank Steve, you know, I mean, for, you know, just being around me. God, it was a great pleasure. You know, when I saw all those guys, Barry Switzer and all those people come forward at his funeral, I mean, I almost get tears in my eyes right now, man. I can hardly talk, you know. I mean, yeah. I was impressed, you know. I mean, he was a real deal. And I've seen the thing at OU at the stadium where they have all the All-Americans listed, and Steve Williams is four in wrestling and one in football.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Wow.
He was a beast. You know, he started wrestling for Bill between his junior and senior year in college, and still had a year of eligibility left, and came back and fulfilled his eligibility in wrestling and football. But boy, you were the guy that he really wanted to. He wanted to have that security. He wanted to have some stability. He wanted to distance himself from some of the mistakes he'd made previously. But he was. You were like John Wayne to him, and I just wanted you to know that. He really, and I, you know, to this very day, and I've had like several phones, and you know, when you do your cell phone, you transfer your numbers.
Right.
I still have his number in my phone,
yeah.
And I just refuse to erase Steve's number because his memory is never going to be erased. I'm always going to remember Doc.
Right.
You know, and
you know what? I got a message. I've got two messages from him that I keep on my phone.
Wow.
I mean,
that's awesome.
You know, yeah, he was a hell of a guy.
Yeah, he was. Hey, look, I want to, is your nephew working in Ring of Honor? Is that your nephew? I'm hurting.
No, somebody's out there. I don't have no kin in the business.
All right. That's God, I'm glad
you know, somebody called up and said, some guy wants to go as your cousin or something. I said, no, you can't use my name. You know, I mean, you know, come up with your own name.
There's
you
know? A guy.
I have no kin, and I hope it spreads out because I don't know who he is. I don't care who he is. But I don't have any kin in the business. Nobody.
So you don't have any relatives in wrestling. Okay, I'll put that sheet down. That's good. Are you doing anything right now? Are your sons still in baseball, or what's
no,
your?
No, my sons are all out. They both graduated from college, and one was in the minor leagues, but he's out and he's working. And the other boy just graduated in May, and he's up. He's back in Colorado too, working. And you know, so you know, everybody's out. So
they go to Baylor.
One of them went to Baylor. One of them went to UT Arlington.
I got you. Well, good for them. Got
yeah.
the college degree, and I watched one son play for Baylor. Schaefer played for
yeah,
Baylor.
Yeah, Schaefer.
Good player.
Yeah.
Good player.
Yeah, he did good. You know, he did really good. Had a great college career, and, you know, I mean, you know.
And you were able to watch most of it, right?
That's why I moved to Waco.
Wow.
I moved to Waco because I wanted to see him play, you know, and
now they're gone, what are you going to move to?
Well, I'm going back to Colorado here in a year or so.
I got a lot of my friends that are wanting to move to Colorado, but probably for different reasons than you are.
Yeah. Well, that's the one reason I might not want to go, but I'm going.
In any event, look, I really appreciate your time. I have so much respect for you, and I'm so happy that you've been able to share some of your career with us today. And fans that follow Japanese wrestling, you know, it's this for them. This is like talking to a deity. Some fans still only want to watch that stuff that year, that era.
Yeah.
They don't like what's going on now, so they'll go back and watch Stan Hansen and Frank Goodish and Bruiser Brody and
yeah.
Misawa and
yeah.
Kawada and Doc and Gordy and Doc and Gordy are a hell of a team. I mean,
you
influence
I mean, them. Great team, just great talent. I mean, we had great talent.
Yeah, know, man.
That's the whole key.
Yeah, and boy, everybody worked hard and everybody worked snug, and it was. I remember that when Watts brought Doc and Gordy back to Atlanta, his goal was to have them have a long term program with the Steiner brothers, because he thought that the Steiner brothers were about the only team that we had on the roster that could hold up physically with Doc and Gordy using that strong style. So they got to have that match, and let me tell you, they had a hell of a wrestling match.
Yeah, that's great.
The Steiners and Doc and Gordon.
Yeah, I just met the Steiners when they first started, the older one, you know. And I was in the WCW. I crossed them a couple of times.
Yeah,
they're great guys.
Good guys, good guys, and now. You know, they're 25 years in the business, so it's like, where in the hell did the time go? But, hey, look, I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much.
I'd like to say one thing before I hang up.
Yes, sir.
I never took myself too serious. I really tried to, you know I had a great spot, and I worked hard for it, and I know who I was. But, I mean, I never ever set out to, you know, I'm this or I'm that. But it's nice, you know. I didn't miss the business when I was ready to get out and retire. But after 4 or 5 years, you know, and then you kind of miss. You miss the guys, and you miss, you know, some of the situations. I don't miss the wrestling really, but I miss, you know, the great characters and everything. But anyway, Jim, I appreciate you calling me, and if people enjoy this, then that's great.
Yep, they will.
I appreciate people still remember.
Now get your hip young sons to let them know that JR's got this thing called a podcast. It's on Podcast One or iTunes, and they can download and hear their dad talk about his life and his career. It'd be good for them, you know. And then
I'll get that information from you. I have no idea what you're talking about.
that's what I was. When somebody said, hey, your agent wants you to do a podcast. I said, okay, what the hell is that? So here's what it is. So, look, anyway, thanks for your time. You're just the best, and I hope that we get a chance to see each other somewhere down the road. Maybe one of them autograph deals or something like that. You know,
I hope so.
Maybe we'll get to do that. I know what team you're going to be cheering for at the Red River game, and you know what team I'm going to be cheering for. So,
I'm really pro Baylor. It's still really hard for me to yell for Texas.
Good.
When they're going against Oklahoma.
Good for you.
Do it.
Well, I know you make an exception, right? Hey,
yeah.
Here's the Oklahoman's biggest fear, that Art Briles didn't become the coach of the Texas Longhorns.
I bet. Let me tell you, awesome guy.
You ain't lying, man. And he can coach some football and recruit. And thank God he didn't go to Texas. And I wish Charlie Strong all the luck in the world, except, you know, a game or two a year. But Art Briles scared me, because give him all those resources, all that money, with all his connections.
Baylor's not too poor.
No, they're not. They're not. They're not. New stadium, too, in the whole nine yards. So, well, listen, I appreciate it.
Okay.
And next time I come to Waco, I'll take you to George O's and buy you a chicken fried steak.
Oh, my God. Okay.
How's that?
Sounds good.
That's a good payoff, right?
That's a good one.
All right, Stan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Man, I want to really thank Stan Hansen. What a great time I had. It was being able to step back in time and become even, you know, more of a fan. Can you imagine growing up on a farm in Oklahoma and an only child? In a town that graduated, a town of less than 1,000, Westville, my hometown. I'm a yellow jacket. What if you find yourself in the mid-70s and you're just fresh out of leaving college and second-guessing yourself, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're 40 years in the business? Well, tonight, talking to Stan, I got to go back to those college, post-college days, because that's when we met, and it was really a cool time in my life. You know, I was learning so much and having so many life experiences, you know, after living in a small town and going to a small college and then getting out on the road with these pros, and they were pros in every way you can imagine, let me tell you. It was an interesting raising. So Stan and I got to relive some of that for me, at least anyway. Next week, my guest is the controversial Vince Russo at Pyro and Ballyhoo. I probably screwed that up, and that's somebody else said I did on purpose. Vince, of course, you know, is a controversial figure. We've not always agreed. We don't have the same philosophies on how a pro wrestling program should be presented in certain aspects. In certain aspects, we do. And we will discuss that next week. I promise. Doing well in WWE Shop. They got everything in stock. WWEshop.com. North America especially, they got it to you in, you know, little no time. And they're always running some great deals. WWEshop.com. As I say, it costs nothing to look. In the UK, in Ireland, in Europe, folks buy JRs on americansoda.co.uk. That's americansoda.co.uk. Good folks, been with them a long time. And then I think last year, maybe year before last, beyondtheropes.co.uk. That's beyondtheropes.co.uk. That Bell's palsy makes me think those R's are funny. Beyondtheropes.co.uk. So they get your stuff to you in a heartbeat, and throughout the UK and in Ireland and in Europe, most of Europe. And of course, my buddies in Chicago are always working hard on our behalf at prowrestlingtees.com/Jim Ross. They are absolutely doing great for us. Just really great. And I'm glad we're doing business with them. Hope you are too. Podcast, it's prowrestlingtees.com/Jim Ross. Simple deal. And if you buy a shirt, and I'd like to know your feedback on the shirts. I guess if you got shirt ideas, tweet them to me. I don't mind. I'm not too proud. If you got a t-shirt idea and you want to print me the concept or whatever, at JRSBBQ. It's easy, right? Sonic, my friend. So that's that as far as the Ross Report is concerned, and Vince Russo, again, a volatile man, a stubborn man, a very bright man with an amazing story. And I'm going to squeeze it all out of him right here next week, at least all I can. So hope you'll join us for that. I told you about the websites, www.shop.com and prowrestlingtees.com/Jim Ross, all those things. I appreciate that. I just want to thank you all for downloading and supporting the Ross Report every week. I'm busting my ass to bring you good guests and good shows and get better at what I do. I'm telling you, interviewing somebody for a long period of time on the phone is challenging because sometimes you don't know when they're finished and they don't know when you're finished. So, I appreciate your indulgence as we try to master this craft and keep getting better and better guests and asking better questions and having better conversations. Well, I can tell you that every time you download Support the Ross Report, it's great for us. It's the easiest way to hit my Amazon link whenever you want to do any online shopping, which is a big deal. It really is, because every time you do that, Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase, whatever it may be, to the Ross Report to help us produce this podcast and keep it free. There are no hidden fees. There's no hidden charges. There's no gimmicks for you to watch out for on this deal. You don't have to buy anything special. Just simply click my click. Is there another better one? Somebody's writing copy. Couldn't come up better than that. Just simply click on my click before you shop. And to get to my Amazon links by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and then clicking on the Ross Report. That's podcastone.com, and click on Keep Our Podcast Free, and then the Ross Report, and get to going. No gimmicks, no tricks, no nothing up my sleeve. Folks, thanks very much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed the Stan Hansen conversation as much as I did bringing it to you. Next week will be an entirely different pace program, a different generation, a different era, a different mindset. the controversial, as he has been described among many ways, Vince Russo on the Ross Report. Is this the podcast that got Vince Russo terminated from Impact Wrestling? Some say it had a major influence in it. You listen next week. You be the judge on how we treated the Ring of Honor and wrestling in general. Until then, I'm good old JR Jim Ross saying thanks very much for being with us. Do something nice for somebody that you don't know. And remember, folks, that our tomorrows are not guaranteed. So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Ross Report. Download a brand new episode every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Now, here are the latest AP News headlines from Podcast One.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
AP Update. I'm Tim McGuire. California Governor Jerry Brown has signed a bill that will eventually raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour.
I'm extremely proud of the message that we're sending to working families by signing this bill.
Brown says the lowest paid workers deserve higher pay.
These people work day and night in thankless jobs that make our lives better. They keep our economy moving and they keep our economy growing. We need to take care of them, just as they take care of us.
The new law adds 50 cents to the current $10 minimum next year. It increases to $11 in 2018 and $15 by 2022. University of California Irvine economics professor David Newmark estimates the boost could cost up to 10% of the low-skilled workers their jobs in the state. Some small business owners say it will have a devastating impact on them. AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.